Life is filled with many things that we appreciate, health and children being amongst some of the most treasured things that we enjoy. We all appreciate health, as sickness, disease, and disorders can affect what we consider a normal life. And there's a desire in most of us to have children to raise. But as good as health and children are they ends to be pursued at any means? Much in our modern health practice has evolved to accommodate these good ends. We have better care for pregnant women and unborn babies than ever before. But we also have many practices that remain unquestioned. In today's episode, we consider ethical issues related to pre-pregnancy and pregnancy screening. Hello and welcome to the Center for Christian Living podcast. My name is Chase Kuhn. I'm coming to you from Sydney, Australia at Moore Theological College, where I'm joined by my guest today, Professor Jonathan Morris. Professor Morris has been looking after gynecology and obstetrics at Sydney University for a long time now, but also working in a lot of clinical research, caring for young mothers and young life. And very glad to have you here, Jonathan.
Thanks, Chase. Great to be here.
Did I get all of your titles right and everything that you've been doing?
That will do. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure. I've tried before in other events, and I know there's been so much that you've been involved in your life. But the heart of it really is caring for women in pregnancy, high risk pregnancy, especially, and that young life. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm what's known as a maternal fetal medicine specialist. That is a subspecialty of the discipline of obstetrics, which essentially cares for women who have high-risk pregnancies. That may be due to conditions they have themselves, such as women with medical disorders who become pregnant, but also particularly caring for those women who develop complications in pregnancy, which may either be their own medical health or that of their baby.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason why I've asked you on today. I mean, we've had you before for events, and I'm grateful for the input that you've given to us previously. But today, I wanted to ask you about the kind of screening that happens either pre-pregnancy, before a woman might conceive a child, or even during pregnancy, the screening that is happening today that's seemingly more common. I think I personally rang you one point when my wife was pregnant with one of our children, and I said, I'm being asked to do all of these tests for babies. Do I need to do this? Is it normal? Should I do it? And it seems between my first child and my children, more than I had, there were more and more things being asked of us and normalized. So I thought I'd get your input on this. Tell us about the kinds of things that parents expect these days as they go through a pregnancy.
That's right, Chase. I think over the last few years, particularly the last decade, we've seen what is literally an explosion of possibilities that relate to testing the unborn baby. Not only in pregnancy, but increasingly now couples before embarking on pregnancy are being encouraged to have screening both them and their partner for a whole range of possible genetic conditions. I think this has been introduced now into clinical practice. It's something that is widely offered. And I think the widespread offering is matched by the widespread confusion amongst those who are planning pregnancy. So I think these things that are being introduced, and it really behoven on us to consider, what do we want? What do we think? And what is the significance of the life that we wish to nurture?
Yeah. I mean, you could imagine back centuries ago, you get pregnant and you have a child. That's the way it goes. Now, increasingly, more and more appointments to be checking on health, which seem to be really good. Positively speaking, the reason why these screenings have been introduced are for what reason?
These tests have been introduced to prevent genetic conditions, some of which undoubtedly are very significant, some of which mean a child will potentially only live for a very short period after birth. But other conditions are relatively mild and are associated with long productive lives, but still conditions that require medical input. So traditionally, people would be very familiar with testing for Down syndrome, which has become very widespread. There are now countries in the world where basically Down syndrome has been eliminated through termination of pregnancy once diagnosed. Iceland, for instance, very, very few babies born with Down syndrome. We've progressed from that, though, from chromosome problems, which, like Down syndrome, is a numeric. There's either an extra chromosome or, for other conditions, there's a chromosome missing. We're now going into the single gene problems, of which there are many, and the most latest tests would screen for about 290 genetic conditions.
Wow, wow. And is that because they're searching now to intervene? Well, maybe I should ask this. You've said a negative that comes out of this. That is that if there is some complications detected, often this is leading to a termination of life. That is a really problematic thing for us in terms of a Christian worldview where we want to value all life. But in terms of the range of genetic issues that are being tested for, are these to screen out those issues before pregnancy happens? Are they just to terminate, or are they ever to modify and have positive medical intervention during pregnancy that might lead to better life conditions?
Thanks, Jason. This is a really important question. And I think what people do need to understand is that the supposition and the basis for the testing for these conditions is very much to prevent a child being born with that condition. So for these conditions, it's not a case that we will offer treatment in the course of the pregnancy to improve pregnancy outcomes. It very much is offering a termination of pregnancy if the condition exists. If we consider it in the preconception, so many of these conditions are what is known as autosomal recessive, such that if each couple carry this gene, there would be a 1 in 4 chance of having a baby that's affected. And so the supposition is that should a couple be shown to be carrying one of these genes, couples can be offered IVF. And embryos can be tested such that those embryos that carry the gene cannot be replaced, and embryos that are gene-free can be transferred, hence what is sold as being a healthy pregnancy. So that's really the value proposition, if you say, is this screening. If these conditions, for instance, in pregnancy, a common condition would be cystic fibrosis. So cystic fibrosis, I've looked after women who have cystic fibrosis, who have babies themselves. But at the moment, it is one of the 289 conditions that would be screened for in pregnancy. And if each couple carry one of the genes that cause cystic fibrosis, the couple are offered an amniocentesis with a view to considering termination, for instance.
Wow.
So it's really important to realize that these conditions are screened for with the thinking that should they be present in the baby, the prospect of continuing with the pregnancy or not should be considered in pregnancy. And prior to pregnancy, the prospect of undergoing artificial reproductive sort of technologies to choose embryos not affected. And that's a profound implication for couples and for our society indeed.
Yeah. So I guess that the way that they're marketing it in one sense, and it really is a marketplace, isn't it? The way that they're marketing this is that a better quality of life for you and a better quality of life for the child you might raise. And so there is a determination before birth that a certain kind of life may not be worth living. Is that correct?
I think that's the fundamental foundational issue here, isn't it? It's about trying to determine what is life that is worth living. Are there lives that shouldn't be lived? And how can technology really contribute to parents in terms of determining what characteristics should their child have? As I've said before, I mean, I guess, is it a child's genetic sequence that determines its significance? It's really a deep question that Christians do need to ponder.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you raised something really interesting there a moment ago. I mean, so we're talking about genetic screening before a pregnancy, and if there's a recognition of even a recessive gene, that you might then take intervention of an artificial reproductive technology. So just in terms of helping people understand that process of IVF, help us to understand what would happen there then if these genes are detected. Life will be brought together. Sperm and an egg will create an embryo in a laboratory. Is that correct? And once that embryo is formed, they will then do a genetic screening on that embryo. Is that right?
So that's right, Chase. What the process is, if parents undergo this screening for these 280 to 300 genes, if they both carry the same recessive gene, what is suggested is that these couples undergo IVF, So in that process, a woman, the mother, is stimulated to produce a large number of eggs. Most commonly, as we know, that in one menstrual cycle, there's just a single egg produced. IVF basically superstimulates a woman such that many eggs can be retrieved. Those eggs are then mixed with the partner's sperm, and as many of the eggs as possible are fertilized. And then at that point, after the first few cell divisions, usually at about the 8-cell embryo stage, a cell is removed for embryo biopsy. That biopsy is tested to see whether this embryo carries the particular genetic condition or not. Obviously, if it doesn't, those embryos are frozen and can be transferred, and those embryos that have the condition are discarded. Now, IVF in itself, by its very nature, there is, in any IVF cycle, there's always a large number of embryos that don't survive. So this is essentially both through the IVF process itself and through the selection of embryos is creating a lot of wastage in the embryo space.
Yes. And I guess for helping us to get clear on this issue as a moral issue, when life is created in that embryonic form, as Christians, we really believe that that is a life, that is a child that is being formed there in that moment. Is that correct?
The beginning of life has huge implications for our theology and our thinking. And I think every Christian really does need to wrestle with the issue, when does life begin? Over the years, there have been debate about that, but it's interesting to reflect biblically. Jesus, who came into this earth as a man, I mean, his conception is announced in the Bible. Yeah. It does seem both theologically with scientific backing that life begins at fertilization. So if that's the case, it does mean those embryos, be they 2, 4, or 8 cell, are life. And if Christians land on that point of view, it shapes your whole worldview about this issue.
Yes. And so then the termination of an embryo or the discarding of an embryo is then a discarding of life and a termination of a life.
That really becomes, I think, what Christians do need to wrestle with.
Yeah.
And obviously, having a family, reproduction, they're such integral parts to human flourishing. I mean, these are difficult issues, but they are ones that I am concerned that Christians do really think through prior to being in situations where these tests are being offered or suggestions are being made, because I do think that, like all things in our life, putting down strong foundations before we encounter difficulties is much easier.
Take a break from our program, I want to tell you about some more resources for your Christian life. First, I encourage you to browse the Center for Christian Living website, where you'll discover a wealth of resources, including past podcast episodes, videos from our events, and essays on important topics. Head over to ccl.more.edu.au to find out more. And while you're on our website, I encourage you to register for our final live event in 2022. As we conclude our series of events looking at commanding the heart in Matthew 5, we'll look at the topic of vengeance. From the dawn of time, systems of justice have demanded recompense for wrongs. The most fundamental systems have been kind for kind, that is, an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth, a life for a life, and so on. In fact, this sort of rudimentary justice system is biblical and at the foundation of so much of the law and scripture. But in the kingdom, Jesus tells us that there is no room for vengeance. Indeed, life in the kingdom demands forbearance and forgiveness. What does this mean for us practically? Is there any justice? I invite you to join us on October 19th as Dr. Andrew Arrington leads us to discover how Jesus transforms our expectations and pursuits of justice and leads us away from vengeance. Head over to ccl.more.edu.au now to register. Now let's get back to our program. We've been asking you right now about a lot of the science behind it, but I would like to shift for a moment in the conversation and say again about the kind of experience that people have these days and what might drive some decisions. It seems to me that this industry is now playing to what has typically been a patient, now as a consumer, that there are things that can be offered to you for your life in the way that you would hope to have your life. That is, if you would like a child, we will be able to try to facilitate a child. If you would like a child, we could facilitate a healthy child. In places, I know that there are bans and even potential about screening for the sex of the child, that you would like a girl. Well, we could find a girl. We would like a boy. You could have a boy. These kinds of issues. Is that correct? Is that a right representation of some of the shift in this that makes it more complicated for Christians? Or is that too crude of a painting?
I think your crude painting is very accurate. I think early pregnancy now, I often reflect, we no longer congratulate people. We often just tell them all the things that may go wrong and how can they consider this?
Yes.
I think the whole approach and emphasis in early pregnancy is one of screening, of risks, of this and that. And I think it is heavily driven, particularly in those countries where these tests are available, often at the parents' own expense. I think it's heavily driven by a market that seeks to promote them without necessarily emphasizing some of the really deep societal issues that this raises up. You know, some of these conditions are of variable severity. You can't always predict their severity according to what the genetic sequence is. Some of them are highly controversial, congenital deafness, for instance.
Yeah.
As Christians, we do need to think about what is our responsibility as parents for caring for our child, regardless of the condition or the nature of that child. And I suppose this is in a world that's getting increasingly complex. And as Christians, although we can share and justify our worldview, I recognize we necessarily can't impose it on those who don't share that worldview. But I think we are behoven to talk and to give a reason for the thinking that we have.
Yeah. And I think this is what I really like about talking to you, Jonathan. I mean, you've been a friend of mine for a long time now, but I find that you're really patient in this process and try to really care for people and what they might be feeling. I mean, just from the perspective, not painting it so crudely that a parent might be a consumer, but you know there are couples out there desperate for a child. You know there are couples that worry about their child suffering from something that may make life more difficult for them and them therefore wanting to protect them from that. You know, there are couples that would love to have their child not maybe have similar things that they might have suffered themselves in life. And so when these services are made available, we ought to be understanding why people find them attractive, not just that they are wanting a designer lifestyle, but actually that they are really seeking after good things, life, health, etc., good gifts from God. And yet, that is not the whole sum total of what makes for a good life, is it?
That's right. I entirely agree. The allure of some of these technologies, the promise that they give, obviously, it is something that understandably people wrestle with because these are deep issues. But having said that, the counterbalance is a community that cares is yes. one that can offer support. A community that cares is one where these challenges shouldn't be just those of the parents. A community that cares is one that sees that there is a whole wider support agencies. And I think that many of the debates that we have lose the fact that God gives us many things, but he does also give us the capacity to care. And I think that that counter argument is one that we don't hear, that basically these children, I think we all have seen babies with Down syndrome, for instance, who brought much joy
yes.
to people's lives. For a long time, those children were institutionalized and were denied education. We now have babies with Down syndrome that go on to tertiary education and know the Lord Jesus. And I just think that we need to be very careful if it's just the technical aspects, technology that rules our reproductive lives.
Yes.
There's so much more to it than that.
Yes. And I think you've just said something helpful. Should we have a child with either a severe disability or even a minor disability, the church community itself has so much to offer in the way that they welcome, receive, love, support, care for those families. I've seen that in churches I've been involved with. I've seen it in family members that have children with varying disabilities that have loved, nurtured, cared for, and been supported by the whole community. Likewise, I've known couples who are infertile, who have continued to persist with naturally seeking children and have been loved and cared for in the community, as well as knowing couples that have really suffered through that and found it very difficult because of churches placing such a high value on family, everything else. So all of these, I guess, come into the way that we think about what kind of community we're fostering as a church and how we're actually considering one another.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I think this is something our churches need to do a self-assessment, don't they? Where are those families? Where are those children with these sort of needs? Are they in our church congregations? Are these families made welcome? I do think that being theologically truthful on the one hand, but being socially engaged and welcoming, it's so important to have both, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I want to just encourage you that I've loved the way that you have patiently nurtured relationships and cared for people as they wrestle with these issues, helping to lead them towards truth and yet also recognizing these are decisions they have to make on their own. Coming back just for a moment then, let's say a couple is pregnant. Maybe this is their first pregnancy. How would you imagine that pregnancy progressing? And what kinds of advice would you give to couples about screening and what they must do or mustn't do and how they might go? So at various stages along the way, they get ultrasounds. Is that all normal? Should you get ultrasounds?
Childbirth generally is so much safer now. And as you know, spent some time in Africa where still women die because of complications in pregnancy. So ultrasound has a real place in pregnancy. I think it has an application both in ensuring that the mother is kept safe. So determining the position of the placenta, for instance, is very important. There are some conditions for the baby where it's really helpful to know beforehand that a baby's condition is identified that may require some sort of intervention that can at times be life-saving. So babies sometimes have heart conditions, sometimes babies have growth abnormalities, where timing of birth is really important. So I do think ultrasound, when it's used to help guide management, is really important. I suppose the next issue, though, sometimes those ultrasounds find things that can be concerning. Sometimes it's clear from the ultrasound that a baby has a condition that means it won't survive the pregnancy. I guess over my career, I've been alarmed at the readiness with which my profession will often advocate terminating the pregnancy rather than let a pregnancy run its natural course. I think if one looks at life, it's interesting if one accepts the thesis life begins at birth. There are some babies that just live a few weeks and there's a miscarriage. There are those that die late in pregnancy. There are some die soon after birth. I think if we see life as a continuum from fertilization to 80 to 100 years, we see that lives last across that continuum. I think it's important, therefore, that if these tests do show any concerns, that there is a deep discussion, thoughtfulness about the action that should be taken, if any. We then come to the sort of tests that are advocated, like blood tests to screen for Down syndrome and other conditions. Again, I think people really need to think carefully about whether the result of that test would alter their decision to continue with the pregnancy. I would really caution against undergoing tests just to provide reassurance, because although these tests are relatively accurate, they still do throw out possibilities that subsequently are shown to be erroneous. And so you add to anxiety and sometimes lead to other testing. So I think ultrasounds, I would advocate. I perform ultrasound myself. I think they've got a very useful place. I think that the tests that seek to establish genetic normality or otherwise, or screen for possible carrying genetic abnormality, I'd encourage couples to think really deeply about those. Are they tests that, should they indicate a problem, would that be something they would action?
Yeah. And if a couple is talking to their medical practitioner, how many of these things have become just routine? And must you then go through these routine steps? Or how many of these things do you opt into or out of? And I realize we're in a context of being in the state of New South Wales, that might be different from other states, different from other nations, and we have listeners from all over the world. So I guess I'm just talking about even in a developed Western context like our own, what sorts of things have become routine now that may not be necessary? I always take the advice of my medical practitioner. So I'm not saying people should be questioning their medical practitioners. That's, I guess, what I'm asking, what you would say as a doctor.
I think there is very much a situation where there is an assumed view that's adopted by people caring for women in pregnancy. I think that these tests are seen as something that people would like. I think they're often not discussed. I think often it's just a referral form that's given very commonly in general practice. And I do think that it's something that has been introduced without the necessary societal awareness being raised or societal debate about whether our society wishes to offer tests to do away with congenital deafness, for instance. These are big issues for our society.
Yes.
I think they've been introduced without the necessary discussion. So certainly, as with any medical test, I'd encourage people to ask. Is this something I have to have? Is something I need? What are my options? What would happen if I don't do this test?
Yeah, that's very, very helpful. It's very helpful. If we wrap up our conversation, how can we actually talk about this well in our churches? I find this is one of the most sensitive areas because often people have history. So maybe they've done something previously that now they might have changed their mind on and would feel judged for. Maybe they're in a desperate situation and making decisions because of that desperation. Maybe they're just thinking ahead towards the future. Maybe they're aware of their own genetic conditions from their family line. How can we begin to talk about these things? I mean, you and I are talking in a room together right now, but it's very sensitive in one sense when you're in a situation like churches. What do you encourage people?
I think that it's really important churches have forums where these issues are discussed. I do think that they need to be thoughtful, they need to be purposeful, but they need to be sensitive to all those possibilities that you mentioned. There obviously are people who wrestle with these issues, decisions made in the past and struggling with decisions at present. Obviously, those discussions need to be in the appropriately safe setting where people are reassured that there is a God that loves them and that they are loved and forgiven through Christ. But I do think that these discussions need to be had. I think we need to recognize that they will raise further questions. I think we need to provide resources and expertise and personnel to counsel and support people. But that doesn't necessarily shy away from some of the truths that as Christians we do hold dear. But ultimately, I think we need to care for each other. And in that caring, I think it's to offer a society and a community that shares these burdens, whatever they are.
That's lovely. Jonathan, I thank you so much for coming in today and talking with me. And I'm grateful for the work that you've done and the ministry that you have. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chase.
To benefit from more resources from the Center for Christian Living, please visit ccl.more.edu.au, where you'll find a host of resources, including past podcast episodes, videos from our live events, and articles published through the center. We'd love for you to subscribe to our podcast and for you to leave us a review so more people can discover our resources. On our website, we also have an opportunity for you to make a tax-deductible donation to support the ongoing work of the center. We always benefit from receiving questions and feedback from our listeners, so if you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at ccl@more.edu.au. As always, I would like to thank More College for its support of the Center for Christian Living, and to thank my assistant Karen Bielhartz for her work in editing and transcribing the episodes. The music for our podcast was generously provided by James West.